Welcome to Settlement Nation Podcast, the show for trial lawyers and high performers. Here's your host, Courtney Barber.
Hey everyone, welcome back to your favorite trial lawyer and high performer podcast. Courtney here, and I have a few quick questions to answer for you before I begin on today's amazing interview that I have all ready to go for you. So people were asking, how do they make sure they don't miss any of the new episodes that come out? Super easy. All you do is hit the follow button on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It means you won't miss this or any other amazing new interview that I drop on here. I also have new podcast merch going live on our Instagram at Settlement Nation Podcast this week, and we'll be sending out fan packages to a few select attorneys, so make sure you send me a DM. Yes, you can slide into my DMs and ask for some merch. It is really cool. It is super on trend with this whole Coastal Cowboy, Cowboy Carter theme going on right now. I think you will love it for summer. It looks great for guys and gals. So getting on to what is super important today, I have a great show for you with Matt Granda, the managing partner of Claggett and Sykes Law Firm. You all know Claggett and Sykes from episode 61 and 62, where I interviewed Matt's partner, Sean. Not only is Matt a personal injury lawyer, but he oversees all the operations in the business of Claggett and Sykes, growing the firm to over 60 employees, 20 attorneys, and 2 locations. And something to mention, which is also really a big feather in his cap, is that for the past 2 years, the firm was named in the Inc. 5000 list of fastest growing companies in the United States. Woohoo, go Claggett and Sykes. That is amazing. So today we are going to talk about how Matt grew the firm and what it takes to build a successful practice. So any attorneys out there who are business owners and own their own firm or are in charge of growing the firm, this is an episode not to be missed. So without further ado, welcome Matt.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you today on the show. I have been wanting to chat with you for a long time, actually ever since I met you at the Claggett and Sykes, I guess it was a Christmas party or end of year party in 2023. Lots of fun. You guys throw amazing parties, and I got to see inside your big head office there in Las Vegas, which is a very impressive operation. But before we get ahead of ourselves, I want to do a quick little rewind because you have a very interesting origin story, different to a lot of people's that have been on the podcast. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I am originally from New Jersey. So I grew up on the East Coast. I was a kid in the 80s. So I was a G.I. Joe kid. So always super fascinated with military. And after high school, I didn't have good enough grades to get into any of the military academies. So I just decided one day to kind of enlist in the Marine Corps, decided I wanted to get as far away as I could from New Jersey. So I got stationed in California. I thought I was going to Camp Pendleton. I got stationed 29 Palms instead, which most people don't know what that is. And that's the point, I think. And then around the same time, my dad had moved out to Vegas. So we'd come up here on weekends to kind of hang out. I always joke that I stopped here on my way back to Jersey and just never left. So I've been in Vegas about 20 years now. Went to law school here at UNLV at the William S. Boyd School of Law, and started there 2009 to 2012. Started with Claggett and Sykes while I was in law school, and here I am today.
Well, I'm sure they're very happy that you landed on their doorstep. But going back a little bit, when you were young, did you have any aspirations that you were going to grow up to be a lawyer, or did you have something else in mind?
Nope, none at all. It was purely, I call it kind of selfish, where I was, moved to Vegas and you kind of work in the service industry. So I was bartending, waiting tables. And this was in the, I was finishing up my undergrad in the middle of, the Great Recession. So like 2008, 2009. And I'm like, I know I don't want to do this the rest of my life. I need a real job. And I was like, I had a friend that was applying to law school back in Jersey, and he was kind of telling me about it. And I just figured, hey, I'm like, lawyers must always have jobs. They make pretty good money. I'll apply to law school. And I just bought a house in Vegas and knew I couldn't move anywhere. So I was like, well, I'll apply to, you know, UNLV and see if I get in there. If I do, great. If not, I'll figure something else out. And thankfully, I got in. It's one of the best decisions I ever made.
Well, speaking of 29 Palms, I think I remember telling this to you when we met, but for all the listeners, I actually went to 29 Palms a couple of years ago, and it was pretty deserted that day, and there was no one using the outside obstacle course. And I thought, well, how hard this could be. I've seen it in all the movies. I've always wanted to do one. So the first part of the obstacle course was a long piece of wood. It looks like a gymnastics. I think it's like a pommel horse or a balancing beam, but it's quite round and quite high. And I believe what you're supposed to do is run and jump up on it and run along it. Well, I could not even get up on it. So I just laid sideways across it like a wet piece of newspaper, very pathetically, and just rolled off the other side. Then I couldn't reach the monkey bars because they were so tall. And there was one part, which is this tall tower. And I think, and you'd probably know this, I think you're supposed to use your upper body and use your feet and climb up, pulling yourself up. Well, I found that if you stick your feet in the corners where the bolts are, you can kind of pull yourself up that way by using it as a little step stool. So that was my big G.I. Jane military experience. But to actually talk a little bit about the military, you know, Matt, I saw in your bio and from talking to you, I know that you're a Marine veteran and were deployed overseas in Operation Iraqi Freedom. What was that experience like?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was kind of surreal, right? Like I guess fear or scary parts never really set in. I think you're just kind of, part of it doesn't really feel real that you're there. And then the rest of the time, it's mostly just your training kicks in and like muscle memory. So yeah, I was there for the initial invasion of Iraq. So I was in Kuwait. You know, I think we went there end of January, early February 2003, went into Iraq. And then I was there through, I think, June that year. Then came back and somehow they let me out of the Marine Corps. I didn't get called back or anything. So still not sure how that happened.
I'm sure that they saw you had so much talent there for bigger and better things in your future. But what is something that your military service taught you or a great lesson that you've taken away from that time?
Yeah, I think a few things, right? So, you know, I was in the Marine Corps. So I was in the infantry, which I guess I should have mentioned that part. So it's not, right? It's not like an easy job. It's not exactly a fun job. There's definitely fun moments. But it's tough. And it's, I think they really instill in you how to get through tough times and just how to, I think it builds grit. Cause it's just, you got to fight through things because there's a lot of tough moments that you go through. I think it also gives you perspective, just, you know, doing what we do now or anything I've done since then, it's just things could be worse, right? I mean, it's, you know, doing what I do now, it's like nobody's dying usually, right? In the law, hopefully. So I think those are probably the biggest things. It's just kind of that ability to push through things and get through hard moments, knowing that, yeah, at some point it's going to end. It'll get better at some point if you're going through a tough time. And then just, you know, being flexible and adaptable and learning how to kind of overcome any issues you get in your way.
I think that's great. And all great lessons that you've obviously been able to use at any point in your life, because we all have to overcome so many different things. Speaking of the Marines, I have been watching on HBO, The Pacific, and it probably is one of my favorite TV series that has ever been made. I do like it a little bit more than Band of Brothers, just because I like the setting of the Pacific a little bit better, but it is both, I mean, a great. But the character of John Bassalone, who is a Marine hero, I'm sure, to all of you, and his story is just so outrageous, and he seems like such a courageous soldier and courageous man. I'm sure that he's right up there for you guys in Marine kind of godlike status. Am I right?
He's definitely up there for sure. Yeah. Yeah. The Marine Corps, they're very big on history and, you know, kind of the heroes that came before you. And he is for sure one of them.
Good. No, it's actually near my house. I think there's the Barcelona Highway or something. So I always really enjoyed looking at that part of his story. But anyway, moving on from the military, you know, in a very short period of time, you were at law school, then became a law clerk for Claggett & Sykes, then worked your way up to an associate and now a partner. And that looked like it was over basically like a 5-year period. What advice would you have for law students who are stuck in the grind right now and think, am I ever going to get out of this to go somewhere good?
Yeah. Yeah. I think just stick with it. And I think don't settle for something that you don't want to do. Like I got really lucky. I kind of like going into law school, right? I didn't know lawyers growing up. I didn't really know what the law involved, and law school really kind of pushes you to like big law, these big corporate jobs. And that's kind of all you learn about, I think, when you're applying to law school. So that's what I thought I wanted to do. And I think pretty soon in my first year, I'm like, that sounds terrible. I want nothing to do with that. And I kind of came across personal injury somewhere. I'm like, that sounds great. That's what I want to do. So I knew pretty early on that I wanted to do personal injury. I think I got kind of lucky just with the timing of when I, you know, learned of the job here. But yeah, I think just, you know, I think it's not a bad idea to try different things out and learn what you do like and what you don't like. But I think don't settle for a job that, you know, isn't what you want to do.
Right. So when you were a law clerk, what were some important things that you started to see or maybe picking up thinking, when I finally move up the chain, these are some things that maybe I can improve on or want to change?
Yeah. So, you know, when I was a law clerk, you know, early on as an attorney, even I did pretty much all the writing and research for the firm. And when I started out, like I would draft something and give it to Will, and it would just, it would come back just all red. And I'm like, oh man, I don't think I can do this. I'm no good at this. This is terrible. And then, you know, you just kind of, as long as you get it right, I think you can kind of pick up on things. And then, you know, the red got less and less. So I started learning kind of what was important in the issues we were dealing with. And I learned how to kind of distill that down to the really, really important parts of what was important. So I think just learning how to make things simple when you're presenting it to your audience, which for me, a lot of times was the judge, because again, I'm doing a lot of the writing, you know, the briefs that go to the judge that get us to trial, and then just kind of watching Sean and Will do their things, either in depositions or in trial, where again, they're trying to simplify things and get really to the heart of what matters.
And, you know, for everyone who doesn't know, or maybe just joined the podcast midway through, it's easy to look at the trial lawyers and the success and think everything starts from the top down. But unless you have a great support system and team and systems around, you know, it's like the business of law, everything will fall apart. You can't just be like the talent and not have all the support people behind you. You sent in some really great topics that I want to cover. And first off, you kind of brought up patience, which I think is not something that trial lawyers hear very much. Like, say the word patience to them, and I think they nearly have a conniption. So what do you mean when you talk about why firms and people need to be exercising patience?
Yeah, this is something we go over this with our new lawyers, right? A lot of times people come here and they're like, I want to work with you guys because I want to be a trial lawyer. That's what I want to do. And we're like, great. You just got to put in some time and learn what that means and learn how to get there. But the other part of it, right, is I think, you know, when you look at the history of our firm, I always tell people, like, Sean started the firm in 2005. Will started here, I think, 2008. I started in 2010 as a law clerk, then 2012 as an attorney. We didn't get our first $1 million settlement until 2012. So it took 7 years as a firm to get a $1 million settlement. Our first kind of, I think, big trial that sort of put us on the map was 2016. So 11 years until we had a good trial result. And, you know, if you look at that, it's like, that's a long time, I think, for most people that are like, man, I don't know that I want to do that, right? I want that overnight success. And, you know, when Sean got that verdict in 2016, that was the Lowe's case. And I think there was kind of two reactions. There was people who knew him and kind of knew he was capable of doing that. And there's the other people, kind of the shit talkers and the, you know, this guy's, you know, flash in the pan, kind of came out of nowhere. It was luck. And, you know, sort of, I think to some people on the outside may have had the appearance of like an overnight success kind of thing. And I always joke, I'm like, yeah, it was an overnight success, like 11 years in the making, right? So nobody sees what goes on to get to those moments, to get to these trials that we do. So that's, I think having patience in terms of, if you want to be a trial lawyer, you know, put in the work, go to trial colleges, go learn as much as you can, and then just start getting your reps in, you know, getting into trial. But don't get discouraged if, you know, that success doesn't come right away, and be willing to put in the time, because it'll pay off, right? I mentioned our first $1 million settlement in 2012. Like, since then, we've had over 100 seven and eight figure, now nine figure settlements and verdicts.
And I've got two follow-up questions for this. One, with patience, in terms of, you know, a lot of our listeners are solos or have firms that are maybe two to three people. How do they maybe exercise patience when they really want to grow their firm, but they're in those struggling years where it's hard to acquire, you know, cases and clients? What advice do you have for them?
Yeah, I think just kind of look at where you want to go and what it is you want to do with your firm. Like, not everybody wants to be the size that we are, and that's okay. And you asked us back then, I don't think we would want to be this size. But yeah, when you're that small, it can be tough, right? I mean, you're not going to get all the big cases. Like, that just kind of comes with building your reputation and, you know, getting your name out there. I think it just goes back to being patient. If that's what you want to do, you want to get those big cases, you know, start networking with other people. I wouldn't be afraid to find, you know, mentors who can kind of help you out. And that's, I think that's a good way to fast track your learning and really get the experience, to be able to, again, build your reputation and start getting those cases in later on. And also, I think, you know, don't be afraid. At some point, you're going to come to a moment where, you know, if you really, really want to be that trial lawyer at your firm, I think you kind of have to take a step back from the management part. I think it's really, really tough to do both really well. And, you know, that's something that we went through, where Sean kind of gave that up and handed it over to me, where, like, this is the firm he built. And he didn't have to do that, but he wanted to focus on just doing trials. And he's like, I can't deal with, you know, the personnel issues and HR and just day-to-day management if I want to be the trial lawyer I want to be.
That's very, very powerful, because I think, you know, for any business owner at the beginning, you're answering every phone and saying, I'll transfer you to accounts, and you put a different voice on. You're like, it's Mary in accounts, but it really is you. But that is a great word. Another scary word for trial lawyers or law firm owners: delegation, getting other people that are better at other jobs than you, so you can focus on what you're good at. But in terms of the early stages and return on investment, what tips or what maybe strategies did you deploy to market or advertise or bring in cases at kind of when you were taking over the reins?
I was kind of lucky. That's one thing I've never been great at focusing on. Like, Sean has always been that guy to bring in cases for the firm. So as to be honest with you, it's something I didn't really ever focus on. I was more focused on trying to work on the operations and try to put some systems in place for running the firm to work on the cases he brought in. So I think there was kind of that division already there. So I may not be the person to talk about that.
That's good. See, it was even delegated away from you. So that's great. Perfect. So speaking about Shorn, you know, setting up the company and that reputation early on, you said that he really positioned you in a great, well, the firm in a great place right from the beginning. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I think Sean is this, like, he is so good at branding. And it's funny, I've never actually like gone and asked him if he does this stuff intentionally or not. I don't know. I'm sure he does. But like, we started doing these trial colleges, you know, right when I became an attorney, right? I think like a month in my practice, I went down to Costa Rica with them to a trial college. And I was like, man, this isn't so bad. I could get used to this. But we would do like, we were really, really invested in going to trial colleges and learning as much as we could. And even like back then as a brand new attorney, like Sean would go around telling everybody, like, oh, this is Matt. He's like the best legal writer ever. And, you know, Will was, he takes the best depositions you'll ever see. And just kind of like, we started getting these reputations in these trial colleges to the point where like all three of us started becoming instructors at these colleges, kind of because of the way, you know, Sean sort of talked about us. So he started building our reputations for us even back then. And I think just, we were so involved, you know, at these colleges and just really, you know, I think volunteering to help others out and wanting to learn as much as we can, that it just sort of snowballed. So when we did get that first verdict, like people already knew who we were. We didn't have to put in that legwork after we got the verdict, which I think you see a lot of times that there's a lot of really successful trial lawyers out there who people just haven't heard of, and they got really great verdicts, but it doesn't go anywhere because it's, you know, like they haven't really had the opportunity maybe to get their names out there before they got to that point. So now they get this verdict and maybe they'll go do a webinar and then it kind of just ends there, right? Like you just kind of go back to what they were doing before and don't get the I think the increase of recognition.
Yeah, and that is really important. As you said, you know, I think for people wanting to increase their profile, like Sean, becoming an expert on topics, speaking at seminars. I know he's a professor at the law school that you both went to, and doing things like this, like podcasts, getting your name out there and sharing that. Because I know, for instance, there are, and you do too, some amazing trial lawyers out there that get these huge verdicts and settlements, but because they don't promote themselves and think their work will speak for them, people haven't heard of them. But everyone actually is so focused on themselves, usually they're not looking at what other people are doing. So you have to get out there and market yourself. In terms of branding too, one thing I love about your firm is that you really encourage everyone to rep the brand. It's not just ABC Law Firm, many leather-bound books. It is, you know, cool. Right now, Matt's wearing a cap. He looks like, you know, a funky young guy you'd want to get to know, not a stuffy old lawyer. Talk a little bit more about your culture.
Yeah, I think it's kind of, and I think Sean touched on this actually on his podcast, but, you know, the outfits and what we wear, it's just, we want to be comfortable. Like, I don't think wearing a suit makes you a better lawyer. You're just an uncomfortable lawyer probably most of the time. So, I'd rather do good work, being comfortable in what we wear. But yeah, no, we give our whole firm, it's not just the attorneys, we give everybody, I mean, it's t-shirts, hoodies, hats, you name it, we have it. I think we just did a little like doggy drinking bowls. We were sponsoring this event the other day, with a local charity in town where they're doing dog adoption. So we had all like dog themed things, but yeah, I think that's really right. It's just kind of another way to get your name out there all the time. And you know, when Sean first started out, like he was right, he would hand out business cards everywhere. So this is just kind of another way of right. It's just name recognition. You know, we don't advertise. So this is just a way to get our name out there in the public. In addition to, we do a lot of charity work, and you mentioned the party we had earlier this summer. So that's our annual farewell to summer bash that we do in conjunction with the law school. So it started out as a way to welcome the new law students in, welcome back the returning law students, and just kind of a way to build that community where we could get them together with other lawyers and judges in town in one place kind of at the end of the summer.
And you guys do that well. And I love your swag. And after this, you'll have to send me more
for sure.
So I can wear more.
Sure.
So let's talk about intentional growth for a company. You know, you did touch on some people don't know whether they would like their firm to ever be as big as Claggett & Sykes, or maybe they like it being smaller and they can control everything. Do you want to talk a little bit about your plans for that when you kind of started growing the firm to what it is now?
Yeah, like I think I kind of mentioned before, like if you had asked us, you know, I was the third attorney at the firm after Sean and Will. And if you had asked us back then, I think never in a million years would we have ever wanted to have the firm this size. You know, when we moved into the building we're in, we went from like a 3,500 square foot space to a 10,000 square foot space. And we're like, oh, we'll never outgrow this. This will last us forever. And we outgrew it in, I don't know, like 6 months, I think. So we're about to take over the entire like 22,000 square foot building. We have our Reno office. So we've people kind of all over. But yeah, I think, you know, I think if I could go back and do it again, I would want to plan it out better and just kind of look down the road. It's like, hey, this is what we want to do. You know, let's be intentional about how we get there. I think a lot of times, you know, most law firms and law firm owners and people talk about this a lot. Like, they don't teach you business in law school, right? They teach you how to become a lawyer, which is very, very different than actually running your firm. And I think as people start growing and getting a little more successful, they usually do things like hire, you know, reactively. So it's, oh, we're getting more cases. I'm getting too busy. Let me go hire somebody to help out, rather than looking ahead and kind of planning, this is where I want to go. Who do I need in place to get there? Right. And kind of doing it that way. And that's just, you know, look, I mean, candidly, we went through that too, where, you know, we grew so fast during COVID just because we were having so many cases referred to us. We didn't have the manpower to do it, and we needed, you know, more help. But I think now we're doing a much better job of looking at kind of where we want to be down the road and, you know, how we get there and what that looks like.
I think that's great. Do you have any indicators for the attorneys out there who are in that stage? You know, were there any, I guess, things that you would see as warning signs or indicators of, okay, we really need to hire more people? Like, what are things that maybe happened to you that you're like, hey, when it gets to this point, you need to delegate and expand?
Yeah. It's definitely, I think we have it a lot better now. We're like, so we're split up. We have a pre-litigation team and we have our litigation teams. And so our pre-lit team, we kind of look at cases per attorney, cases per case manager. And we kind of know when they get to this level, that's too many. We need to hire somebody. So we can look at, you know, where they're at or when we think they're going to get to that level and start looking at hiring for pre-litigation. For litigation, we like to keep our attorneys around 10, maybe 15 cases per attorney. We sometimes go over that and then you hear about it and everybody gets kind of stressed out. And usually if we start getting above that level, we'll look at hiring more people.
Mm-hmm. What do you do in your firm to keep your attorneys, employees accountable? Do you have some like set meetings? How do you kind of keep track of what everyone is doing?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of things. So we, you know, we have our case management system, so we can look in there at any time and kind of see who's doing what or tasks being completed. And that has some pretty robust reporting that you can look up just about anything you need. But we also, we have team leads that are in charge of each of our litigation teams and our pre-lit team and our appellate team. And so mostly it's Will and I are doing a lot more work with the team leads to try to get them to take on a bigger role of, okay, I'm running my team. I have to make sure people are being accountable. Cause like, Will and I can't do that. It's, you know, close to 70 people. Like, that's just too many people for us to know who's doing what day to day. So it's a lot more of, you know, building out reporting, I think, to see who's doing what. And then again, delegating that to like team leads and our kind of head paralegals, just to make sure that they're checking what everybody's doing. And, you know, then I think end of the day, it's just kind of cases are stalling or, you know, people aren't taking depositions. Like, we can kind of see that. And, you know, we know what moves cases forward and what gets cases either ready for trial or gets cases resolved. We kind of keep our finger on that pulse.
For a law firm, you know, business owner like yourself, talk a little bit about what your daily routine looks like.
It can kind of differ. it kind of depends on the day. But
a standard day that it's not all just emergencies
right.
and screaming.
Right. I come in a lot of times, like I'll start my week out. Usually I'll look at kind of reporting that we have. So like financial stuff. So I'll go back and look at, you know, what we did last week, where we're at for the month, where we're at for the year, that kind of thing. I typically have quite a few meetings throughout the day, either with the operations team that I work with. I'm involved in the marketing that we do. So I meet with our marketing team, and I'll meet with the different team leads kind of throughout the week, just on different issues that come up. I try to do a lot of staying on top of technology and just what's out there. AI is crazy right now, and I'm trying to stay on top of that just to see if there's things that we can put into place, just to make us better. So I'm always looking at the systems we use, the programs we use, what else is out there. So I do a decent amount of testing things like that out. Just a lot of we have an operations manager who has taken a lot of the, day-to-day HR type admin stuff off my plate, but there's still a decent amount of dealing with that too.
And what have you seen on the forefront of AI that you think is maybe the next big thing coming, or that could really help firms out there? Maybe they don't even have the budget yet to hire a lot of people, but is there some piece of technology that maybe could cover some of that, as we like to say, shitty work that no one wants to do?
Yeah. I've tested out a few, and I'm like, I think a lot of this stuff has a lot of potential. I don't know if anything's there's nothing that's 100% there yet. But I was just texting out LexisNexis's AI stuff, and I don't know, it's pretty cool. It's a good starting point for doing research and drafting things. I think eventually document review, AI, I think will be great for that. I think there's some good stuff out there for document review, for helping you to draft stuff. And again, research and kind of a good starting point. The best way I've heard it explained, the way I explain it to people is I would treat AI as I would a legal assistant or a law clerk. So you have to give it very, very detailed instructions. You can't just give it a one sentence kind of thing, because you'll get crap back. So as long as you look at it that way, where if you put in a little bit of work, giving it the proper instructions, it does maybe 80% of the work, and you spend another 10% cleaning it up. I think there's potential there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I will check back with you when you find out all the secrets of everything that works later on to make all our lives easier.
For sure.
But speaking of technology and systems, you mentioned that firm, owners, attorneys have to really research and find what works for them, because it's not a one size fits all thing for every firm. As you said, you could have zillions of cases that you need to manage or not. Do you want to talk a little bit about systems that you have at Claggett & Sykes and maybe things that you think are really beneficial?
Yeah. So I can talk about, I think our litigation process is pretty dialed in at this point. We've put a lot of work into that, and Will took a lot of time out to actually draft out, here's how we work up cases, and this is what we expect of everybody. And it's pretty detailed, it's thorough, but that's what makes us, where there's a lot of, it involves the focus groups. We do work days where they sit down with Will, and sometimes I sit down with Sean and Jordan, and they will go through all these details on their cases and get them really dialed in. I kind of mentioned before, we know what moves cases forward and gets them ready for trial and keeps pressure on the other side. And it's taking depositions, it's staying aggressive on written discovery, making sure we get responses from the other side, and doing motions to compel when they don't respond, which seems like every case at this point. So I think we have that system really dialed in at this point. And then it just kind of, we try to build that into our case management system. So then it's all the tasks and things that people have to do is a little more automated, so they don't have to just remember it, right?
Mm-hmm. And you said that you work up your cases for trial, which is something that I think is a very, very important topic to kind of delve into. Do you want to talk a little bit about why you do that?
Yeah. One, I think it's the right thing to do for your client. But, as a business, it's what gets the best value on your cases, right? You have to go to trial to get the best value, because, insurance companies, without a doubt, keep track of firms, keep track of lawyers. They know who goes to trial. They know who doesn't. They know who will settle every case, and they'll know if you settle cases for the offers they make, right? So, we really just, we act as if we want to take every case to trial. And like, there's some you can't, but we still work them up the same way. We don't treat cases differently. It's actually, sometimes it's a problem because we'll spend just as much time on these smaller cases, like these bigger cases, because we have stubborn attorneys who don't want to lose anything. But no, we do that. And it really, right? I mean, like, what settles cases then is either you have put so much pressure onto them that they have to tap out, or you get up to trial and they don't want to go to trial and they pay what you ask, or they don't, and then you go to trial. But yeah, it's, I think we do a good job doing that, because it, again, it's what gets the value on your cases that you should be getting for your clients.
And I think Jim, who we had on the show a little while ago, he spoke about that as a former defense attorney, saying that they definitely keep track of attorneys that will go to trial and don't just bluff and settle everything. I think that's really important. Do you want to talk a little bit about what it's like to work in a trial firm? Because that real, like, as you said, all your cases are working out for trial. Do you think it's different to working in a firm that does mainly settlements?
My guess is yes, because I've never, this has been like my only job. So
I guess. Yes. Your hypothetical, yes, yes, look at the other
my
side.
Yes. Total brilliant assumption that I'll make here. I think it is, right? I think it's probably the level of cases we deal with at this point. I recognize that we don't deal with typical, like, we don't handle your typical car crash, you know, case. We do have some of those. And, but I think like your kind of settlement firms are probably much more heavily reliant on car crash cases. And we actually don't have as many of those on our litigation teams. But yeah, I think the way we work up things is probably different than a lot of people, just because, again, we're doing, you know, multiple focus groups on every case. We do like a pre-trial work day where they have to sit down with Will and kind of plan out discovery. We'll do another one of those, you know, at some point during discovery, just to make sure we've gotten everything, we haven't missed anything, and there's enough time that we can still go get any information we need that we haven't gotten yet. And we're, again, we're really, really aggressive on like motions to compel and forcing the other side to actually respond and give us the information they're supposed to. We've filed a lot of motions to strike answers recently because it's, I don't know, I think it seems like it's getting worse with them not giving you anything. And then like after discovery is closed, then we start getting ready for trial, where again, they're meeting with Sean and Jordan and doing work days and getting all that information they need. And again, more focus groups. You know, we'll do the big data studies on some of the larger cases. And so I think that's really different. I think the amount of time and money we put into our cases to work them up, I think is something you have to do if you want to do the level of cases we're doing. You know, we had a MedMal trial back in January where I think we put in like $950,000 in costs just to get to trial. So, right, you're talking about those kinds of cases, you know, and that type of resources you have to put in to get there. And I think if you're just settling cases, it doesn't, you're not going to float that kind of money just to take that risk to, you know, settle the case.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it seems to be that with those types of cases, there is a big risk, but there is a big reward, but it is an investment to make sure you have the best of everything. We're getting so close to the end. I can't believe we raced through everything so quick, but what are three bits of advice that you could leave to our listeners, whether there could be law students, young attorneys, solos, people running a big firm right now that want to, you know, maybe transition more into like a trial firm or something, could be on any topic, if you're just going to leave three nuggets of gold for people?
Yeah. I think the first one, it probably applies to law clerks and lawyers alike, is I would find a mentor, someone that, you know, can teach you all the things they've done and the mistakes they've made. Not to say that making mistakes are always a bad thing, but it's a good way to avoid the big ones, you know. But I think finding a mentor is huge. Definitely get out there and network. I know Sean kind of told the story about how I got hired. I can tell my version of it if you want. But I think getting out there and networking, if you want to build a business, that's how you do it. And I'll give you a great example. Our Reno office, one of our attorneys volunteered to move his family up to Reno to go run that office. And, you know, Sean said to him, look, you know, if you want to be successful, he's like, you need to go have, I think it was like 50 lunches in 90 days, something like that, you know. And he's like, if you do that, you will be successful. And to his credit, he went out and did it. This is Josh in our Reno office. He went out and did it and is just killing it up there. I mean, he's had, I think, 3 or 4, like 8-figure settlements in the year and a half he's been up there. Really just, I mean, crazy, and just a great example of how getting out there and kind of getting, you know, building those relationships within the community is so important. And I think that gets overlooked a lot these days with, you know, SEO and everything of being online and people wanting to focus on that. And, you know, that's great and all, but I think building those relationships, if you want to be a trial firm, you need those relationships, because a lot of your business is going to come from referrals and you need to know people to get referrals. So I think that's a huge one. Again, something I personally wish I had done better at over the years, but it did get me this job. So remind me, I'll tell you my story. But and I think the third one is just, I'll kind of, I guess, touch on what I touched before, just again, being patient and kind of getting yourself out there and start building a reputation now, a good one, not a bad one, build a good reputation now. And it really, really like kind of compounds later once you start getting successful.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I especially love your comment about the hustle mentality, you know, getting out there, having the lunches. I think a lot of people think that there is some secret that you can work your way around doing the work, but it always comes back to you have to show up, you have to be visible, you have to put in the hours, and it does come back. And it sounds like for Josh, he's doing great. And for all of you, I mean, even Sean, I know he's so busy and like yourself, doesn't have a lot of free time, but you see him at all of these events, giving up his time to teach other lawyers. And from that comes opportunities, networking, case referrals, everything like that. I love that.
I was going to say, that just reminds me, that's probably, I can't believe I missed this. That's probably my overall number one piece of advice is give back as much as you can, whether it's to other lawyers, you know, giving back what you've learned, your time, your money to, you know, to charity, to other organizations in your community. I think that is the probably number one thing that will bring back the most to you over time. We kind of talk about like financial karma, and it's like, you know, I think Sean said one time that you can do well by doing good. And I think we've done that, but I think give back as much as you can. Don't worry if people, you know, there's some people who just take, that's okay. Don't let that discourage you. Just give back as much as you can.
That's great. That's very nice. Now I have two questions left. These are personal questions for you. One, what was the obstacle at the Marine obstacle course that you liked the least?
Oof. Probably the first one. So like it's a, you jump over the little, I have this memorized, I think you jump over the little log. And the next one is like this looks like a pull-up bar, but you have to pull yourself up and kind of like roll over it. And that one always just kicked my butt for some reason. The rest of them were okay.
Well, I didn't even get past the first one, which is the log. So you're better than me. And then at the end, what's next for you? What's on your calendar? What's coming up? What are you doing?
Yeah, like today or just in general, what do I have going on?
Just anything. Do you have, you know, is it I'm grinding till I die? Oh. Is it I going on a vacation? I'm going to grow the firm. We're going to open new locations.
Yeah, I think I can talk about this. We're working on trying to get out there and meet more of the like settlement type firms and working with them to say, hey, set aside like your 5 or 10 best cases, find a trial firm. Doesn't have to be us. We'd love it if it was us, and you can give me a call if you want it to be, but it doesn't have to be us, but just find a trial firm to work with on those cases. And just kind of look at it again, talking from like a business standpoint, look at it sort of like an investment where like, I'm going to get the money on these cases a few years down the road. Whereas if I settled them, maybe I'd get it now, but just the money you'll get on those will be so much higher. You're going to get your clients the right value on their cases. And so we're starting to work with more firms like that to do that. We spent a week in Connecticut earlier this summer, kind of working with a firm on doing that. And just going over, it really evolved into like some of the changes they would have to make kind of structurally and as a business to make that work, just because, you know, their business model is settling cases. So, you know, that's another good point. If you want to go from that type of firm to a trial firm, is you got to look at all your systems and structures, because usually when you're a settlement firm, like your pay for your attorneys is focused on eat what you kill. So they have an incentive to settle cases. So like, we don't incentivize our attorneys to settle cases. You're not getting paid on what you settle. We pay you a salary that should get you, you know, you can pay all your bills and you're doing okay. But then the real money comes in bonuses at the end of the year, which we just do discretionary bonuses based kind of on how the team does, how the firm does as a whole. And like, you're kind of more encouraged and incentivized to get as much as you can on your cases, which again means working them up for trial. So we're trying to do, that's the, I think, big thing we want to work on is getting out there and meeting more firms across the country.
Well, you guys heard it here first. If you fall into that category, make sure you send him an email or give him a call. And on that note, how do people contact you if they want to know more about this or something that you spoke about today that they would love to chat with you more about? What's the next step?
Usually email is fine. Mine is matt@claggettlaw.com. So claggettlaw.com.
Well, that is awesome. Thank you so much for your time. I hope you had fun and it wasn't as scary as you may or may not think it was. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you. No, I had a blast. I appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to Settlement Nation. If you love the podcast, make sure you follow and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify so you don't miss any new episodes. You can also see more about Courtney's guests on Instagram @Settlement Nation Podcast. Until next week, cheers, mate.